Welcome to the Donna Sebo Show. Donna is an international mental practitioner, award-winning author, counselor, speaker, teacher, and radio TV personality. Dedicated to empowering others through her mental skills, she also features authors and experts from all over the world to share their knowledge and experience with you, the listening audience. Now, let's join Donna and her guests. Here's Donna.
Hello and welcome to an hour of Mind Power. This is Donna Sebo, and today we have a very, very special lady who is our guest, a woman that decided she was going to tell truth and not be afraid to express information about a lifestyle, a way of being past and present, and we'll also find out from her what she feels the future of her country that she has such a deep love for, which is Iran, what it might be. I want to welcome to the airwaves Naheed Sewell. And Naheed, I'm so delighted that you're able to be with us today because I said to you before we came on air, I have a great deal of respect and appreciation for your courage and your willingness to talk about a subject matter that in many cultural aspects you would be put to death for expressing if you were not in the United States. And I just have a great deal of appreciation for you. And again, your courage. Thank you for being here today. Welcome to the show, by the way.
Donna, thank you. It's my pleasure to be here. And I appreciate your comments. And I hope that by writing this book, although I may have taken a chance with some things, that I can get a clear message across and really hopefully get exposed the way women are treated and be an agent for change.
I want to share something with you before we go into the book. Many, many years ago, my life was directly involved with Armenians who had come from the Middle Eastern culture and the country of Syria. And they had tremendous oppression in Syria. And of course, it was under, at that point in time, communist dominance. And I can remember hearing the phenomenally wonderful stories about Lebanon. And it was just, it was this cosmopolitan area. Of course, it's no longer in existence. And I can remember thinking, there's so much beauty, there is so much history. And of course, I was quite young and quite naive. And here we are living in a world today where areas that had been at peace, so to speak, that culturally had been so diverse and people did have a harmony that existed. And today we have a war and just so much anger and so much hate that is being perpetuated on so many different levels. When you decided to do this, and I want my listeners to know before I ask you the rest of the question, you were born in Tehran, Iran. You have your MBA from Lehigh University, and you are a very successful career woman in information technology. You have authored 4 other books, nonfiction. You've written over 250 articles. And here you are, just with this information that I think is precious. When you were deciding to do this, what were your emotions with this? Because this story, the Ruby Tearcatcher, an Iranian woman's story of intolerance, I was in tears at times when I was reading this book. And the pain and the anxiety sometimes that I felt was so strong. You did a fabulous job of writing. What was it like when you were doing this?
Well, Donna, that's a great question. But first of all, thank you for sharing that it touched you emotionally, because it really has touched me in much the same manner. And I'm going to guess that perhaps part of the reason why you felt what you did is because the story is real.
Yes.
I do want to make sure that the listeners recognize that The Ruby Tearcatcher is a novel, but it is based on people I know or I know about. The things that happen are real, and they have happened, and probably continue to happen as we speak. I actually started writing this story about 5 or 6 years ago when I learned about someone that I know who had been jailed and tortured because they wanted information. They wanted her father, basically, and that's what the story is about.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
It touched me. But there's another reason why I wanted to write this story. I was one day I was having coffee with a friend, and she said, do you remember that movie, Not Without My Daughter, with Sally Field? And I said, yeah. She said, you know, that movie has left the American people with the impression that all Iranians are Islamic fundamentalists. Mm-hmm. So why don't you write a book to demonstrate, to show people how normal you are? I said, well, first of all, thank you for calling me normal. and secondly, I said, you know, that's not such a bad idea. So, you know, the inspiration came from, you know, two areas. One, I had this story that had broken my heart about this woman and what she had gone through. And two, I really do love my country, and I wanted to help Americans recognize and see how, let me dub that, how normal we really are, how warm my people are, so that I can erase that image and replace it with the way the people are. It's different. People are different than politics, and I had hoped to really draw that distinction. So that's really what was behind this. And as I started writing this, I guess I'll be honest with you, there are times that obviously I've had to read the manuscript over and over as I edited it. There were times that even though I knew what was happening, I would get all choked up and teary-eyed myself because I could feel, being this woman, Layla, and feeling what she was feeling.
I think that if one is a student of history, one realizes that what happened with Layla, it's very much in history where it's happened to women in cultures around the world. And I can even say, even in U.S. history, there has been, for whatever, maybe the younger women don't know of it, but if you research history, you find that women have had to battle very hard in the United States to have what we have as freedoms today. This is not something that just happened overnight, because certain cultural dispositionings, depending on where you have come into in this world, are not easily released, because of the position of attitudes that exude power and dominance over population. And so you have these various things. And when I was reading your book about this wonderful, vivacious, vibrant woman comes from a family that could have been an Italian family, a Greek family, because mama wants to make sure that she's going to marry a good boy, you know, I've heard the same story, whether it's been from a Jewish family, a Greek family, an Italian family. You got to marry the boy, like we know. You know, this is just, it's just amazing. It's consistent.
Yeah.
And dad, in this issue of family, he wants his daughter to be educated. But what I found so profound in your story is that it was very human. As a counselor, I've interacted with people, fortunately, from around the world, and so many of the issues in a family. You want to make sure the girl's married. You want to do this. You want to do that. And here is Leland. She's saying, forget getting married. I want a career. I don't want this stuff. Yeah. And mom battling with this. And father saying, you know, that's a pretty good idea. I want you to be able to stand on your own 2 feet. And yet mother's immersed in a cultural patterning that goes back hundreds of years. And you have all of these flavorful components that are there. And Layla is such a tremendous person. She really, really is. And just knowing this character and the story as it evolves. Her brother is in the same cultural trap.
Yes.
And so he has a demeanor, although he's fully supportive of his sister doing certain things. But when they come over to the United States, that's what I loved about this book. You took and said, this was the harmonious environment that we were in. This is the way the normal family was. And for all intents and purposes, they could have been a U.S. family living in Kansas. But instead, they're in the Middle East. So you've got a different cultural field. And then all of a sudden, a whole new power structure comes in, changes things overnight. Literally overnight.
Well, Donna, that's how it felt for us Iranians, actually.
Mm-hmm.
So on the anecdotal part, my mother always wanted me, just as most mothers want their daughters to marry a nice boy, but she wanted me to learn how to sew and cook and, you know, that whole thing about making rice the right way. This
yes.
is very important. Seriously, every Iranian mother tells her daughter, if you can't cook rice the right way, then you're not going to find a good husband. So
mm-hmm.
I've been raised thinking that. But one thing that I do want to share with you is that although the horrific things that happened to Layla in the Ruby Tearcatcher didn't happen to me, I'm not the one who was jailed. What you read about in terms of the day-to-day life, the young girl and the experiences she had and the coming to the United States, really a lot of that is me and my personal experiences.
Mm-hmm.
The father is my father. The mother, perhaps a little exaggerated for impact, is my mother.
Mm-hmm.
So it's really my life and how I felt. I did feel I grew up in, you called it Kansas. I had another reader tell me as she read the book, it sounded like I lived in L.A. We had freedom to dress as we wished.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so some of the things that I don't like now, and it affects, there have been a lot of changes for a lot of people, but I'm a woman, and for women in particular, especially women like me who have an education, it's really hard to accept that I have to wear the chador over
mm-hmm.
my head if I don't want to. They changed the legal marrying age from 18 to 13. So I'm
mm-hmm.
So forget the whole, we're not even talking arranged marriages, but at 13, it's just, you know, something that I can't conceive.
Mm-hmm.
Although I grew up, I could go wherever I wanted, whenever I wanted. Today, if a group of women or girls, if you go to a restaurant, they actually seat you in the back of the restaurant.
Mm-hmm.
And they tell you it's for your own protection. Well, I'm not sure what we need protection from, as
mm-hmm.
though we're frail and fragile. It takes two women's votes to equal that of a man's vote. Another example that I can give you is, if you are an Iranian woman in Iran, you cannot leave the country without either your husband or your father's permission, depending on whether you're married or single. I mean,
right.
things like this, you say, we take things for granted. Something as simple as, I'd like to leave the country to go travel. I have to get my husband's permission. These are the things that I guess I'm not asking for anything grand. I'm asking for some simple things for us women to have, just like I experience here in the U.S.
Mm-hmm. One of the things I will share with you is that I have known Middle Eastern women, and they were of a fairly wealthy positioning. So one would look at them and would envy them in a way. You just say, wow, these women have a great deal of money. But what I learned was that their children were kept hostage to make sure that they came back to the Middle East, that if they decided that they wanted to leave the Middle East permanently, and this was a good 10 years ago, the children were held hostage. And the children were not allowed out, and passports were taken away from you. as soon as you went back to the country. So this was 10 years ago it was bad, and then it's gotten progressively worse, and it is not getting any better. And the downside is it's just as bad for the men. It affects them. When women are not educated, when women are not treated with respect, and someone might say, well, you don't know what you're talking about. I do, because I've seen it. And it is something that when it comes to the family, to the average person, as soon as they're behind closed doors, everything's different. But the lie that they feel that they have to live and the fear that they live under, it is really sad. So even these women that were very, very wealthy that I had the chance to interact with, and that's not even talking about experiences that I was aware of before, it is so sad, yet little by little, I think, the women are beginning to recognize that they need to do these things for themselves. And it's very, very hard on those who want to take away their power, take away their individuality, to honor that. And that's something you bring out in the book, the difficulties that the men have. The father that you said was your own father, he eventually had to leave because he was outspoken. He was speaking against a lot of the things that were evolving, and he had to flee for his life.
Yeah, I guess, life has changed, as I said, for everybody. And, you know, I don't want your audience to think that this is really just a sob story, although, you know, I hope that it's inspiring. I do want to mention, I dedicated this book, as I say, to my sisters in the Middle East. And that's mm-hmm. because I want to give them hope. I want them to know that there is hope, that we do have power, that they can rise above intolerance and fundamentalism and look for and obtain what's right for them. I think it's entirely possible. I also fully recognize that I'm one of the lucky ones. Mm-hmm. I'm one of the lucky ones because I had a father who believed in me. I had a family who supported me no matter what I did, even when I didn't marry an Iranian man who's a Muslim. By the way, you mentioned early on in the interview that crimes punishable by death. I married an American, and as I understand it, that's a crime punishable by death. Mm-hmm. So, because not just because he's an American, but because he's not Muslim. So,
right.
but you know. Those are the rights that I believe we have as children of God, you know, as mm-hmm. as people, as human beings. Mm-hmm. And I wouldn't say I'm a defiant person. I wouldn't say I'm a free spirit or a rebel. I just want to be like everybody else. So I think these are basic rights. And the story is really, it really describes the beauty of the Persian culture. You know, I had hoped not just to expose how women are treated and how the Islamic revolution in Iran changed the lives of women in particular in Iran, but I also describe in the book the sights and sounds and ceremonies and traditions. So it's a great cultural ride. You really learn about the richness of, you know, the land of blue-tiled mosques and the ancient Persian kings, the saffron rice and the lamb kebab. You know, there's a lot of that as well. So, you know, hopefully you'll get some joy out of that in addition to understanding the realities that have been going on.
I believe that you have stated it so well. And having read the book, the cultural aspects of the family and the interaction and the food and the bazaars that you talk about in here and the various components of social traditions that I think on many levels are just so lovely. There has always been this wonderful, wonderful contribution that the Arab world made centuries ago to knowledge and education and medicine. I mean, there was so much that was there historically. The Arabs and the Chinese were so far ahead of the Europeans, et cetera, when it comes to history. It's just amazing when you find out about that. And it makes you sad, when, at least it did me. And I'm sitting and I'm reflecting on the personal experiences I've had with the people of the Middle Eastern cultures through the years, and looking at how easy it is for fear to become a part of your daily mental diet, and then you become subjugated. I think that's a better word. And how hard it is for those people that did not have an escape to be able to weather this. And throughout your story, there are those moments for all of the brutality that was committed against this woman, Leila. The fact that it actually was a person that knew her family, knew the father, that enabled her finally to escape because he felt that he had a debt that he owed the father, and he knew what was going on, and this was what he had to do, and he was putting his own life at risk as well as some other people that were doing it. And I think that is so poignant because, again, if you look at history, it is always those people of conscience, I don't care what their cultural background is, that will say, this is intolerable. This is not acceptable. So we have to help in the only way we can, but we can't go anywhere, but let's do it. Work together as a team, cover it up, and help this person get out because they can. I mean, there's stories. You go back to World War II, you go to World War I, you go to various aspects of history in any country in the world, and you have these heroes and heroines that say, go, be safe, I have to stay here. I do not have a choice. This is what I have to do, but I'll do everything I can to help you know freedom. And that, to me, is so special. And this is in the story of Leila and your book, The Ruby Tear Catcher. When you are speaking to groups, when you are doing interviews, there's so much heart in this book. When you are sharing the concepts or doing storytelling about this, it must really be challenging to you because of the misconceptions some people will have. We get a lot of stuff from media. How do you counterbalance this misrepresentation about your culture, the beauty of the culture, versus what people are being bombarded with at this time? And it's been going on for a while. How do you balance that out for people?
One day at a time, one person at a time, one book event at a time. It's that simple. Mm-hmm. I'm one person, and obviously media is you know, pervasive, and it does affect people because, I mean, honestly, even I start to believe some of what I watch, but it's not well balanced, and that's the unfortunate part. So I guess what I feel that by having published The Ruby Tear Catcher, I can never go back home. I recognize that. I know that because obviously there would be risk for me now. But I wanted to tell people the story because I wanted to make that difference. So I'm doing my part, and mm-hmm. that's really all I can do. And I hope that people who read the book, who watch the media, remember that at the heart of it all, we really are the same, regardless mm-hmm. of our religions, regardless of our gender, regardless of our cultural background or socioeconomic background. And that's really the central message of The Ruby Tear Catcher. It's about tolerance. So let's not assume that just because someone is from the Middle East or goes to the mosque, that they're any different than the man who may have blue eyes and blonde hair and goes to church. We really are the same at the heart of it.
I agree. I agree with you. And as you said, it's the extremists, it's those that want to dominate. You say in your book, this is in your 23rd chapter, that when you were, and the character was interacting with a man she dearly loved, an American Jack, the discussion was about what was going on. And, you know, the conversation, is it about religion or politics? It's about oil money. So money and politics. Why do people do these things in the name of religion? Again, historically, you can go to just about every country on this planet, and there is the same kind of game that is being played that is cloaked in illusion to deceive instead of the clarity that needs to be out there. And I just think that what you're doing is just absolutely fabulous. I think the Ruby Tearcatcher, you have written so beautifully about your culture, the wonderful things about it, and having experienced people from that part of the world, their graciousness, their hospitality, their love of story, as you said, they are just people. And that is so important to remember, no matter what culture you're interacting with. But we do have to be alert to those individuals that want to take away the rights of people, male and female, so that they can have dominion, so that they can take things over and say, I know what's better for you than you do. I'm going to do your thinking for you. This is what we're going to do. You have no value unless I tell you you have value. Anything like this has to be fought against, because I don't care where you are. Like I said earlier, it's happened here in the United States. So we have to take a stand. And I think the more that women can be educated, the more that they can think for themselves and get back on track with the integrity, with who they are, then watch out, because you're going to see change, and you're going to see big change. And I, again, just compliment you, because I think you've done such an incredible job with this book. And Leela is not a wishy-washy female. She's intelligent, well-educated, very much like yourself, and it's wonderful how the story ends. And I'm not going to tell how the story ends, but the Ruby Tearcatcher is absolutely one of the most powerful books you could ever read about what is considered a very hot spot at this time. And I think as women, we need to honor and respect those that have gone before us, that have, just as Nahid has done and continues to do, to represent the finest and the best you possibly can, teaching others that you have options, and you must honor and respect those options for yourself and also for others. And it's only when we're speaking about it, only when we're able to talk about it openly, are we going to be able to make a difference. And Nahid Sewell, I think you've gone a long way towards doing that. What is your website that people can go to if they're interested in finding out more about your wonderful book?
Donna, first of all, thank you for summarizing everything that I've been feeling and thinking and working towards. I appreciate it. And thank you for having me on your show. The website is
www.therubytearcatcher.com. www.therubytearcatcher.com.
Yes.
For those of you listening, it's very important that you understand something here. And that is, in the United States, we have history of people of all backgrounds from around the world that dared to stand up, speak out, and many times they lost their lives. Didn't make any difference whether they were Indian, black, white, yellow, green, purple. Didn't make any difference. They stood tall for what they believed in and honored and respected the rights of others. This book, The Ruby Tearcatcher, will grip you not only in your mind, in your thinking, but also make you aware the battle always goes on for freedom. We cannot be sleeping with this. We have to be awake and intelligently understand what happened in the Middle East can happen anywhere. And we have to take right positioning with our own demonstration of the rights and equalities for all people, no matter what their background may be or their gender. Nahid Sewell, thank you again for being my guest. Check out our website, therubytearcatcher.com, and find out more. We'll be back in just a moment. Don't go away.
Are you concerned about nutrition? Do you work hard to eat right, try to feed yourself and your family nutritious food? Well, you'll want to know about glyconutrients. What are they? These are sugars that are present in nature. However, we're not getting them in our food anymore. Scientific study is proving that these sugars are necessary for all cellular and immune system function. Over 20,000 studies are conducted each year on glycoforms alone. These are the sugar protein structure that line each and every cell of the body. 4 out of the last 8 Nobel Prizes in physiology have been awarded for research in the area of cellular communication and how these sugars work in the body. This is Donna Sebo. Every day I bring to you information that will empower and light up your life. I would like to invite you to visit my website, DelphiInternational.com, and find out more about these glyconutrients. That's DelphiInternational.com. Go to my website, go to the left side of the screen, tap on the button that says glyconutrients. MIT's Technology Review, February 2003, states that glycomics is one of the 10 emerging technologies that will change the world. Education is the key to advancement of understanding and making our lives better. Visit my site, DelphiInternational.com. Go to the left side of the screen and tap on the button that says glyconutrients. I know it'll make a difference for you, as it has for me.
Do you have a group, organization, or club that would like to have an interesting and dynamic speaker? Then you're going to want to have Donna speak to your group. She motivates audiences towards personal empowerment, giving them tools for their personal and professional success. If you would like Donna Sebo to bring a presentation to your next event, call Delphi International at 253-582-5604. That's 253-582-5604.
Hi, this is Donna. Welcome back. 888-815-9756 is the toll-free worldwide telephone number that if you want to call in and let me light up your life with a little bit of intuitive insight, I'd be delighted to talk with you. Again, 888-815-9756. Emerson is a writer that has left such a legacy of wisdom. And I wanted to share a thought that he had that I think is appropriate. We do not yet trust the unknown powers of thought. Whence came all these tools, inventions, book laws, parties, kingdoms? Out of the invisible world, through a few brains. The arts and institutions of men are created out of thought. The powers that make the capitalist are metaphysical. The force of method and force of will makes trade and builds town. Everything begins with a thought. Good, bad, or indifferent, it all begins with a thought. And when we can recognize that, the power of our minds is limitless. You have greatness inside of you that is ready to be born. And you may have to go through a pregnancy, so to speak, to be able to birth the greatness within you, and that can be doggone uncomfortable. But I'll tell you what, that greatness comes through you for the purpose of making this world a better place. Let's take our first caller for the day. Welcome to the show, first name or initial, and where are you calling in from?
Hi, Don, it's Catherine from Canada.
Hi, Catherine, where are you in Canada?
Oh, I'm on the East Coast.
You're on the East Coast. Is it warming up there? I'm traveling to New York in April. I'm hoping all the snow will be gone.
It's starting to. Yes, it's starting to warm up.
Oh, I'm so glad. I really didn't relish the idea of having to take long johns with me. Of course, I'll have to be honest. I don't own any. I don't
well,
like them.
Well, I can't speak for what I can't tell you what it's going to be like in New York, because actually they've been had colder weather than we've actually had. So,
okay, that's all right.
Mike, carry, take something with you just in case.
Okay, I'll bring a portable heater or something if I need it. Well, that's all right. I'm just being persnickety. Let me give you what I'm getting in mind, Catherine. The first thing that crosses my mind is you're breaking through your own glass ceiling. As I'm observing you, I really believe that you are going to feel so good and yet at the same time a little scared because of this glass ceiling that you have set for yourself. You're breaking through it. It's just shattering into a billion pieces. And it's sort of scary because I don't think you have anyone else around you that is experiencing this that you can sort of kibitz with so that you can have that feeling of, wow, this is wonderful, and push through your fears that you may have. But you're going to do it regardless. And I want to compliment you on being thorough about the research that you're going to be doing for yourself. So all of this is coming into place. All of this is coming into a very solid positioning, and I really like what I'm seeing. Now, I will have to tell you that you have got a feeling of sort of being wishy-washy inside of yourself, and you're going to be very, very self-critical. And I think that this is quite normal, because often when we make our breakthroughs, if we don't have individuals who have had similar breakthroughs around in our environment, we sort of feel insecure. We don't want to give ourselves credit for what we have accomplished. But that's okay. You're going to be able to acknowledge what you have achieved and then move on from there. There is a lot going on in your life. You are open and receptive to change, which is excellent. And you're saying, I'll take it one step at a time. You're doing a very good job with this. Hold true to that patterning. One step at a time, what my guest said, one step at a time, one day at a time. And that is going to work for you. There's something I'm picking up with you in sinus. It's as if your sinuses could give you these tremendous headaches. It could be you may need something like a humidifier in your environment. And a real easy one to have is maybe a crock pot filled with water. Turn the crock pot up to a higher temperature and just let it evaporate into the air. I think the air can sometimes be rather dry, and that's not unusual, especially with winter. But I do think you need to be aware of that. But I don't see it staying with you for very long. What question do you have for me today?
Well, I'm out of my home, and I'm trying to get back in. I've applied for a legal separation, and my husband is fighting me on it. He doesn't want it, but he doesn't seem to understand that he can't fix things unless he takes his steps to fix things on his own, and I need to be on my own.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm just wondering if you see me getting back in my home. And
not anytime soon. I think that your step with a legal separation is a very good step. I believe that what you are doing, you're doing it for yourself. So as I said, you've broken through a glass ceiling that you had put upon
right. You.
And I would encourage you not to be so attached to the house. I would encourage you to be in your own place, in your own space, and make it the way you want it to be. Because you're really taking the time now to really have integrity with yourself. And that is priceless. This is an optimum period in your life. So,
right. As
I said a moment ago, take one day at a time, one step at a time. A house is just a house. Don't be attached to the house. Remember, you are going to make a difference.
Right. Well, I was just hoping to be able to get back in until things have been settled, like, you know, with where my marriage is going. And then, you know, I know that we'll probably end up selling the home. And then I'll be going off onto my own little castle, so to speak.
Correct. So honor where you are right now. And it is tough, when you are making decisions, you're the one that initiated the action. So there is a part of you, though, that deeply wants the security that this house has represented to you, but it's not the security. The security is inside you. If you don't
right.
believe that, watch the news about the people in Japan. I mean, the tsunami, oh. the earthquake that has hit over there that is just absolutely unbelievable, and then the horrific tsunamis that have assaulted this. The greatest thing you have at any time in your life is who you are. And
right.
tragedies and things can occur, but you carry you wherever you go. You carry
exactly.
yourself.
Yeah.
This goes with all of it. So it's honoring yourself, honoring what you're wanting to acknowledge and what you know needs to be changed, and being true to yourself. And you're correct. Your husband has to handle his own responsibilities. You cannot fix him. This isn't the way things are going to work. So it's putting him, it's giving him an opportunity because of what you're doing to be able to be honest with himself. That can give you both a tremendous amount of clarity if that is what you are going to want for yourself and if that's what he wants for himself. And it may be that he will not have that clarity. And that is something that you have to be okay with.
Right, because he doesn't think he has a problem. He thinks our relationship has the problem, but that we there's no reason for me not to be, that we can't live together in the same home and go for counseling. But he's actually my problem, so I can't fix him.
Correct, but he's not your problem. This is not something
no.
you can address, because as an adult, he's got to address issues. And if he's not willing to look at that, that's his right and privilege. Your right and privilege is to be who you wish to be and to have integrity with yourself.
Exactly, because it's with him, it's a blame game. Like, he admits he's been hard to live with and blah, you know, all the stuff they say, but turns around and says, but you push all my buttons. So it's
don't you just
apologizing,
love it.
But
No apologies.
You know,
no apologies
you know.
Here. It's just as if you were sort of dealing with a kid. Personal responsibility is personal responsibility, and that's why your stepping away and being in an entirely different space is really a tremendous move forward for you.
Right.
And he has the right and privilege to do and act as he wants to do, but it is not going to be the same way. It's not going to be
no.
the same way. So that is something that he has to be willing to work with. And if not, then that's all right. That's his right and his privilege. But you do not have to compromise. You do not have to be a sacrificial lamb. And you don't need to try to go and fix something that just is not fixable.
Right.
You're going to have to take a break
feeling.
And just, okay, well, you're on the right track, dear. Just be honest with yourself. That's so important.
Okay. Thank you so much, Donna.
I appreciate your calling in. You have a wonderful weekend. This is Donna Siebel, and I know we're going to be taking a break in just a moment. If you'd like to call in and chat with me, 888-815-9756. That's 888-815-9756. I wanted to share with you quickly before we go on break. There was a couple that the husband had been in the hospital, and he had had a major heart attack, and he was ready to go home. And the wife and husband just were so grateful for all of the good things that had been done for them while he was in the hospital. And she said, we got so many balloons from people. We just loved them. It really made the room and the environment so cheery. But they didn't know what to do with the balloons. So there were a lot of people, they found out, that were in recovery units. And one of the nurses, the wife, asked, excuse me, is there anyone in the ICU who hasn't had any visitors? And the nurse said, yes, there is. There's an elderly woman who doesn't have any family living nearby. Her room is down the hall. So the wife gathered up all of the balloons, walked into this lady's room, and said to her, a secret admirer sent these beautiful balloons for you. And it just filled this elderly lady's room. And she just broke out into a smile, this elderly patient. She was thrilled, the fact that this secret admirer gave such a thoughtful gift to her, made her feel just wonderful. And the lady's name is Barbara Workman, and she said, my husband and I felt so lucky to have given her a lift when she needed it most. Donna Sebo here. We're taking a break. When we come back, a little bit of this, a little bit of that, and don't go away.
If you're searching for the perfect gift for a child, consider God's Kiss by Donna Sebo. That's right. Donna is not only a mental practitioner and psychic, she's an author as well. God's Kiss beckons all children and the young at heart to enter the dream world of a little traveler named Johnny. You can order your book today by sending a check or money order to Mrs. Sebo's Classics, Post Office Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington, 98497. That's Post Office Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington, 98497. If you'd like both the book and cassette, you pay $19.95 plus applicable tax and shipping charges. This is the book for your favorite child of any age. Donna Sebo's God's Kiss is about a child's sense of place in the world, and it's destined to be a children's classic. Order now. Call 800-872-8852. God's Kiss is written by Donna Sebo and illustrated by Ed Ged Rose. Buy it today. 800-872-8852.
Donna Sebo publishes a popular, inspirational, and insightful newsletter filled with information about her upcoming guests, her travel schedule, seminar presentations, and upbeat articles to lighten up your life. You can subscribe to this free monthly newsletter by emailing her at donna@delphiinternational.com. That's donna@delphiinternational.com. You can also go to her website, www.delphiinternational.com, and review past publications. Keep in touch with Donna through this monthly publication. Again, her email address is donna@delphiinternational.com, and her website is www.delphiinternational.com.
Hi, this is Donna. Give me a buzz if you'd like to chat, 888-815-9756. Well, I want to thank those of you that have been sending me these absolutely amazing emails about animals. I received a grouping of photographs. I just so appreciate you, and I'm so grateful for it. But these were of puppies, and they were boxer puppies, lab puppies, I mean, all kinds of little puppies. And, of course, puppies are just priceless. But I wanted to share with you a story about Judy McFadden. And she had a Scottish terrier, McDuff. And, of course, we love Scotties. We've had a number of Scotties through the years, and they are just such special little people. And although we lost our Kindle, which was our female Scottie a few months ago, Victor, who was much younger, and he's still with us, he's just absolutely delightful. So I have a special spot in my heart for Scottie stories. And Judy apparently had gotten a Scottie puppy. And she said, this little puppy just looked her right in the eye. And she said, the thought ran through her mind, I wonder what adventures we're going to have together. Now, the year was 1994. She was living in Columbus, Ohio. And at the time, she was in her early 50s. And when she got this little puppy, McDuff, that's the name she gave to her puppy, she gave McDuff to her husband as a Christmas present. Well, the dog loved them both equally, didn't have any preference. However, 4 years later, this couple ended up being divorced, and McDuff ended up being with Judy. And she said, I really had some emotional issues. I was angry at my husband for the divorce. I was filled with all kinds of hate. However, McDuff missed my husband terribly and would keep looking for him. And then she watched this go on day after day. And she said, I was so aware of this wonderful dog's unconditional love. He didn't care that we weren't together. He didn't need to know anything. He just loved my husband. And he loved me. That was all that was important to him. So she decided she would pay attention to McDuff and what he was doing and begin her own process of healing and acceptance of the changes that had occurred in her life that she hadn't wanted. Well, during this period of adjustment, her mom was robbed, and it was quite traumatic for her. Her mother was very traumatized by this invasion, as you could expect anyone would be, ended up in the hospital in critical condition, and died a month after the incident. Now, here's Judy. She is just totally overwhelmed with grief with her mother's passing. She was on the floor crying, and McDuff came up to her and started licking her face, licking away the tears that were flowing down so heavily. And she said, "The dog made me stay in the moment, brought me into a healing presence that," she said, "she would never, in a way that she would never forget." She said, "Just having McDuff close and petting him would keep me grounded. It would make me aware of where I was, what I was doing, and that I had to live in the moment." And she said, "McDuff taught me something else. He began being of service to others. She took him to training to become a therapy or a comfort dog, and they'd visit people in hospitals, nursing homes, and various care facilities." And she said they even went to facilities where people were in serious difficulties with mental illness and had maybe really major physical disabilities. And she said, "I didn't want to stay there. I wanted to leave. But here's her dog, McDuff. He went in with his tail wagging." And she said, "I just learned so much from this little Scottish terrier. He taught me how to look beyond appearances and accept people for who they were, regardless of circumstances." Now, in 2003, McDuff was diagnosed with cancer, and she said, "It is just amazing, even though he passed away from the disease." She said, "McDuff taught me so many things. He taught me how to love, regardless of whatever traumas can come into your life, because that's really what life is all about." And I thought that this story was so profound that I wanted to share it with you. Also, there's a little boy by the name of Stephen, and there's a picture that I have in front of me of McDuff with Stephen. It's called a Reading with Rover program. Now, Stephen was flunking. Do you know that after he was introduced with McDuff, and part of the Reading with Rover is that you actually read out loud to a dog that keeps you company? Do you know that this boy went from a D average in school to being on the honor roll after he was in the habit of reading to McDuff every Saturday? And Judy said she was able to attend this young man's high school graduation. And she said, "It was thrilling for me to know that my little Scotty had made such a difference in a very dysfunctional boy's life." That's the way it is, isn't it? You never know that who you are and what you do can have an impact on someone. And we all have that capacity of making a difference. And that little Scotty McDuff, well, he taught Judy a few things, and animals will do that. Animals are amazing. They don't care what your background is, what your traumas have been. All they know is that they love you. And they're there for you, and that's their job. So I hope this weekend, one, that you'll have a good time at whatever you do. Two, remember always that you're the master of your fate. You are the captain of your soul. Your mind belongs to you, not to anybody else. Don't be afraid of learning new things. Don't be afraid of trying something different. Don't be afraid of opening up your heart and feeling and understanding that life is about living. Not existing, but living. Enjoy. And don't forget to share a smile with that stranger that you will cross the path of. You never know what they're going through either. That smile may just light up their life in a very special way. God bless. Be back with you same time, same place, right here on bbsradio.com. Bye for now.
You have been listening to The Donna Sebo Show. If you would like a copy of today's broadcast, send $10 to The Donna Sebo Show, P.O. Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington, 98497-0272. Be sure to put the date of the broadcast in your request. If you are not able to be a part of today's program, join Donna and her guests Monday through Friday, and she will be here to take your calls. Thank you for listening and being part of our program. Have a wonderful day.